paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Thank you, Bob. We could use a little more happy days, couldn't we?
Must be great having your own place, you know?
What brought that on?
Richie had to wait to use the bathroom again.
Oh, well, if that's all it takes to want a place of your own, I would have left your mother on our wedding night.
That passed for high comedy once upon a time, and it wasn't a bad time. It's 107 on WGN. Hi, it's John Williams. And Gary Marshall died several days ago, earlier in the week. It seems like a really long time ago, but I had a couple of audio bites. I thought I'd share them with you because, frankly, this has been one of the most distressing weeks of my life. And so I thought, okay, I'll just start with some of this stuff. In fact, just while we've got the happy days theme in our mind, who will forget the time Fonzie worried that he was going to lose his cool?
Something's happening to the Fonz. What is it?
Yeah. This morning, an 18-year-old punk pulls into my garage. He says, hey, my carburetor needs adjusting. You think you can handle it, kid? Kid!
Well, he must have been from out of town.
You know what's happening?
No, what?
I'm losing it.
Losing what, Fonz?
Losing what? I'm losing my cool.
Oh, no, you're probably just having a slump. Everybody goes through slumps. I mean, even Mantle and Mays, those guys go five or six games.
Hey, I'm not talking about grown men chasing little bulls around a field. I'm talking about the Fonz losing his cool.
Can you come here a minute?
Yeah.
We don't have any change. We thought maybe you could start the jukebox.
Yeah, could you give it the old Fonz touch?
Yeah. Hey, I'm in a slump.
Poor Fonzie. Couldn't get the jukebox to go with the punch of the side of it. So a couple of scenes from Happy Days, which Gary Marshall was the creator of. Gary Kent Massarelli. You remember him as Gary Marshall. His mom was a tap dancer. His dad was a film director. He attended public school in the Bronx, but attended Northwestern University. He studied journalism. He went to the Medill School. And then he became a writer for The Tonight Show. He moved to Hollywood, where he teamed up with Jerry Belson as a writer for television, and they worked on shows like The Dick Van Dyke Show, the Joey Bishop Show. They adapted Neil Simon's play The Odd Couple for television. And on his own, Marshall created Happy Days and then Laverne and Shirley, which starred his sister Penny and Mork and Mindy and more. In the early 1980s, he met Hector Elizondo while playing basketball, and they became great friends. Elizondo appeared in every film that Marshall directed, beginning with Marshall's first feature film, Young Doctors in Love. Elizondo once noted that he is written into all of Marshall's contracts, whether he wanted to do the movie or not. In the opening credits of Exit to Eden, their eighth film together, Elizondo is credited, quote, as usual, Hector Elizondo. But the thing that, you know, really sort of got me thinking Gary Marshall was when I realized that that was him that played the casino owner or manager in Lost in America. And to get you to that great scene, we have to start with another great scene that precedes it. Lost in America, as you remember, the Albert Brooks movie. Albert Brooks and his wife are distressed with their lives, and so they decide to sell everything. They're going to discover themselves. They buy a mobile home, a great big camper, and they're going to drive across the country, and they're going to discover themselves. They've sold everything they have, and they've created a nest egg of money upon which they'll live as they sort of reinvent themselves. They pull into Las Vegas, and they're going to stay at a casino that night. Albert Brooks goes to bed, and his wife starts to gamble and realizes that she can't stop. She wins and then loses everything they have. She, the next morning, has to tell him that the nest egg is gone.
I guess this was my fault. That's what I'm thinking. Maybe I just didn't explain the nest egg well enough. If you had understood, you know, it's a very sacred thing, the nest egg. And if you had understood the nest egg principle, as we will now call it, in the first of many lectures that you will have to get, because if we are to ever acquire another nest egg, we both have to understand what it means. The egg is a protector like a god, and we sit under the nest egg, and we are protected by it. Without it, no protection. Want me to go on? It pours rain. Hey, the rain drops on the egg and falls off the side. Without the egg, wet, it's over. But you didn't understand it, and that's why we're where
I
we are.
I understood the nest egg.
Well, please do me a favor. Don't use the word. You may not use that word. It's off limits to you. Only those in this house who understand nest egg may use it. And don't use any part of it either. Don't use nest, don't use egg. If you're out in the forest, you can point. The bird lives in a round stick. And you have things over easy with toast. I'd like to have you write 1,000 times on the pavement. I lost the nest egg. Come on. I lost the nest egg. Say it first. Say it 500 times. I lost the nest egg. 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 I'm starting it for you. You jump in anywhere. I lost the nest egg. I lost the...
You imagine being in a camper driving across the country with that guy, even on a good day? That was a bad day. But Albert Brooks came from advertising in the movie Lost in America. And so he's got a great ad campaign and idea. I mean, he's an ideas man, and he is going to save themselves from their own doom. He's got his bathrobe on. That night, he goes into the casino and visits with the manager, and that's played by the late, now great, Gary Marshall. And Marshall looks resplendent. He looks like a casino manager. He's got a beautiful suit on, cufflinks, wonderful tie, ornate desk. And sitting on the other side is Gary Marshall leaning in, or is Albert Brooks leaning in with his bathrobe. And here is Albert Brooks's pitch.
As the boldest experiment in advertising history, you give us our money back.
I beg your pardon?
Give us our money back. Think of the publicity. The Hilton Hotels has these billboards all over Los Angeles where the winners of these slot machine jackpots, their faces are all over L.A. And I know that works. I've seen people at corners look up and say, maybe I'll go to the Hilton. Well, you give us our money back. I don't even know now because I'm just coming off the top of my head, but a visual where if we had a billboard and the Desert Inn handed us our nest egg back, this gives the Desert Inn, really, Vegas is not associated with feeling.
Well, first of all, those people on those signs, they won. You lost.
But that's it. That's the campaign.
Watch the campaign.
You gave my wife and I our money back because you reviewed our situation and you realized that we dropped out of society and we weren't just gamblers and we made a mistake and you gave our money back. Do you know you couldn't get a room in this place for 10 years?
Then everybody will want their money back. All the gamblers will say, hey, go to the Desert Inn and get our money back.
Not gamblers. You keep all the money. It's just that my wife and I aren't gamblers. That's what I'm saying. That's the distinction. My wife and I represent the few people, and I'll tell you something, there's probably nobody else that's ever going to come and have this happen. So really, probably we're the only two. We represent the people who have taken the chance, and we made a mistake, and then the Desert Inn corrects it and gives it back. There is a warm feeling here.
But you don't think everybody then will want their money back?
No. In the campaign, you make a clear distinction between the bold, who would be my wife and I, and then all the other schmucks who come here to see Wayne Newton.
I like Wayne Newton.
Darker shame, darling, darker shame.
Needless to say, it didn't go well.
Thank you for all the joy and pain.
You gotta love at the end of that scene, though, he says. Gary Marshall, the casino manager says to him, but your room comped.
Would that happen today?
Our problems are solved. Our room is comped. Your room comped. So now, you know, the next day they got to leave the hotel and their motor home and they got nothing. They got like a couple $100. And that is, you know, I've listened to those two scenes probably half a dozen times each this week, and I smile and lean into them every time. What a fun, you know, good, fun. It's a little dark in places, but what a funny movie. And Albert Brooks is, of course, classic, but Gary Marshall, really good in that movie, too. We think of him as a writer, director, and producer, but he pulled it off in that scene, that's for sure. So there's that. There was then also on our, and Bob will do as we always do at the end of the show, the Vibe Score segment where we sort of feed you all kinds of different news stories. We then end that with a question, and then on a scale of 1 to 100, you vote. So what do you think of Donald Trump's speech? 1 to 100, 100 great, 0 bad. But we also have a category called Laugh. And we post each week something that's kind of funny and ask you on a scale of 1 to 100, how funny is it? And there's this comic, Gary Gilman. Do you know who Gary Gilman is?
I don't think I do.
I don't either. I've never seen or heard this guy. He's just fantastic. And he did something that I think a lot of us do on the radio sometimes, and that is for a piece he did with Conan. He was on Gary Gilman. Gary Gilman is somebody else, maybe?
I don't know who Gary Gilman is either.
Thank you, sir. You're a team player, Bob Kessler. So he's on with Conan O'Brien, and he tells the story of a documentary film he watched. The subject of the film was the time when the U.S. Postal Service changed all of the abbreviations of the states to two letters. Massachusetts, for instance, used to be M-A-S-S. They said they want it to be just two letters for all of the states. So how did they decide which? They made a whole documentary film about it. His monologue about that is brilliant and hilarious. And I'll give you 4.5 good minutes of it next on WGN. Griff, are you telling me that this movie that I'm referencing or that this comic is referencing has not even been made?
I think he was kidding.
God, I'm such a sucker.
I'm not 100% sure.
Helvetica was a movie made about fonts, right?
Yeah.
So I thought, well, as bizarre as this sounds, maybe they made a movie about this.
This is really going to change listening back to it to think you thought all this was real.
Oh, I think at the end of this, are you 100% sure this is not real?
No.
Okay, then listen to this. This is Gary Gilman. He was on with Conan O'Brien, and this is the best 5 minutes of his monologue.
Thanks very much. I just wanted to recommend a documentary to everyone, and then I'm going to go. It's about the men and one woman who abbreviated all 50 states down to two letters. All you have to know for this is that we have 50 states in America, and they each have a two capital letter abbreviation. But that wasn't always the case. Up until, I want to say 1973, and so I will. Up until 1973, every state had its own length of abbreviation, and it was chaos. Like Massachusetts was M-A-S-S period, Florida was F-L-A, Utah was Utah. They just dropped the H, not much of an abbreviation. But then the post office said, no, every state has to have a two capital letter abbreviation, and so they convened a crack squad of abbreviators. They assembled a ragtag outfit of rogues, misfits, and ne'er-do-wells. How often do well? Ne'er. They ne'er did well. And they were charged with abbreviating all 50 states down to two letters. Now, I read this description to the documentary, and much like you, thought to myself, how are they going to make a 98-minute documentary about a task that couldn't have taken more than 6 minutes to complete? Boy, was I wrong. It was an adventure. Ups and downs, ins and outs, friends became enemies, enemies became friends. They started off, they thought it was going to be easy because Alabama lulled them into a false sense of security. They said, Alabama, AL, holy crap, this is easy. We're going to finish before they stop serving breakfast in the hotel restaurant. And the boss said, guys, if we finish before they stop serving breakfast, breakfast is on me. And then one guy said, oh, I hope they have an omelet station. Just for context, the omelet station had just been invented, and it was sweeping the nation. And this other guy said, you know what, I'm not comfortable with the omelet station because I feel like the omelet chef resents you. Like, he didn't want to be the omelet chef. Nobody dreams of being omelet chef. He wanted to be the chef. Now instead of giving the orders, he's taking the orders from your stupid wife and your ugly kids. And I think one day he's going to snap, and I don't want to be there when it happens. And they were like, well, why don't you just get Eggs Benedict? And he said, I don't like holiday sauce. And they said, did you just say holiday sauce? Yeah, why? Because it's hollandaise, you moron? And then the boss said, guys, I hate to be a nudge, but could we get back to abbreviating the states? We still have 49 left. And apologies were made, and an understanding was reached, and they got back to abbreviating. And they said, what's next? They said, Alaska. Everybody cool with AL? But somebody caught it. One man sheepishly raised his hand and said, sir, I think we might have used that one before. Are you sure? I'm pretty sure. Well, let's check the minutes. Dottie, read the minutes back to us, hon. Dottie was the wisecracking secretary. Every 1970s office had a wisecracking secretary, and this one's name was Dottie. And Dottie was a pistol. She was a real hot ticket. Dottie, listen to what Dottie said. They said, Dottie, read the minutes. How Dottie is this? He said, read the minutes back to us. This is so Dottie. And she goes, you mean the minute? Oh, Dottie. Dottie, what are we going to do with you? Spank my ass and make me a martini? Dottie, you're incorrigible. Now read the minutes back to us, you Randy Minx. And she said, it's Hollandaise, you moron. Et tu, Dottie. How do you know Shakespeare? You don't know Hollandaise. That's a paradox. Alaska AL, Alabama AL. We did use that one before, boss. And the boss said, guys, not a big deal. We'll come back to it. It's not going to happen again. Certainly not going to happen 27 more times. Foreshadowing. So what's next? Arizona, AI. There we go. We're back on track. Next, Arkansas.
And then Arkansas. And on it goes. And then you get to Massachusetts and Missouri and Michigan and all the M's. And it's dawned on me, Bob, there are times where I thought, well, which one is AK? Is that Alaska or Arkansas? You know, is AL Alaska or Alabama? Is AR Arizona or Arkansas?
Because you send a lot of mail to those places?
I'm not always clear on that. So we're not 100% sure if this is an actual movie, the documentary that he's describing. He didn't give it its title. But what did somebody, tweeted us, Griff, or texted us?
No, somebody tweeted at him, said, I was looking for this documentary you were talking about. And he responded, no, I made it up.
He sounds so believable. Helvetica is a movie about fonts. Come on. Now I want somebody to reverse engineer it. I want somebody to go make the movie about how they decided which letters went with which states. But maybe that wouldn't be a good movie. Anyway, that little piece of audio, that little monologue is from Conan. And it is one of the ones that we featured and asked you to score on our Vibe Score app. So we feed you funny things. We feed you the news. We ask you what's your vibe for the Cubs now that the second half is up and running. And, of course, it's a good vibe for the Cubs. We'll go over the scores and more of that later on. Speaking of sports, sort of, there is a new documentary. This is an actual movie because I watched it with my own eyeballs. And it was made about Michael Vick. And you think, well, who cares about Michael Vick these days? Why that story now? Those questions answered in a minute. It's 128. This is WGN. Just dawned on me, Bob, you and I have to have off-the-air conversation that I'll just mention on the air now. Are you going to be able to help us out on our Teddy Roosevelt show?
Oh, yeah. I'm coming. It's on my calendar.
So you're going to play a little musical introduction or interlude?
I could do that. Yeah, I've been researching the matter. I have. Harmonica player, there are good reasons to include that instrument in a Teddy Roosevelt event.
So when Teddy Roosevelt comes onto stage, do you think you should be playing something
like that?
And would it be what's appropriate for that?
You know, a couple of things would work. You know, John Philip Sousa marches were big in those days. And
you can play a John Philip Sousa march on a harmonica?
I can play the John Philip Sousa. I could. There is something he wrote for the harmonica called the Harmonica Wizard. Yeah, I've been doing my research.
My gosh.
Yeah, so
I'm hosting the show on stage with him. I haven't worked on it as hard as you have on the harmonica introduction.
Not only was the popular music of the day and did Sousa write something, there was a Teddy Roosevelt model harmonica.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, this is awesome.
I wish I could play one of those, but they're very expensive because they are rare items today.
You do the damn interview. You're better at this than I am. I've been interviewing this guy on stage. We've never talked about the Teddy Roosevelt harmonica. We are going to do this show Saturday, August something or another. I'll get you the date in just a second.
13th?
13th, yeah.
I even know the day.
You even know the day, and I don't. This week's been a fog for me. And, in fact, here comes producer Griff with the...
He's got all the pertinent info. Yeah.
That's why we pay him the big bucks. 26th President of the United States. Yeah, it's going to be at the College of DuPage, August 13th at 10 a.m. at the MAC, as they say. That's where we usually do this show anymore. So if you want to get tickets, go to wgnradio.com/events, I believe is how you do it. Let's see here. Just a limited number of tickets remain. You know, they always say just a limited number of tickets remain. Actually, there aren't 100 tickets left to this thing. So you really do want to go to WGNradio.com/events and buy your tickets online or over the phone. All the information you need is there. It's 1:37. You and I will catch up on that, Bob, but thank you. Hey. That sounds like fun. Okay, so before the show, I had a chance to talk to Joe Iannarella. He is the executive editor at Bleacher Report, and he is the executive producer of a new documentary film about Michael Vick. And I'm like, all right, why a Michael Vick movie? But he answered that question and more just before the show today.
Hi, John. How are you today?
Good, thanks. And you executive produced this too, right?
Yes. But Johnny Sweet was the writer-director who built the relationship with Michael Vick over 5 to 6 months that led to this piece.
Why Vick now? I mean, what got you guys to tell the story in 2016?
To be honest with you, John, we were focused a lot more narrower in scope. We were looking to a piece on Michael Vick and how he became enamored with chess during his prison term. He used it both to teach himself patience, maturity, strategy, and we thought it was an interesting piece that we had not seen done before. And we were looking to put something together that was a little more digital friendly in the 5 to 10 minute range. And we built a relationship with Michael, Johnny Sweet, the director, where Michael and his reps invited Johnny to come along when they returned to Virginia Tech for Michael's former coach, Frank Beamer's final game coaching. And then they invited us along to accompany them when Michael went to the state capitol in Pennsylvania to lobby against animal cruelty. Mm-hmm. And we had such a level of access over 5 to 6 months that we thought it just made a natural transition for us to make our first foray into a full 50-minute doc.
I don't know if you agree with this, but my observation is this story can be and has been told about a lot of people, athletes, celebrities of all sorts, average Americans. But it's sort of the, you know, claim to fame, the stardom, the sin, the redemption.
Absolutely. I'm sure it'll only be a matter of time before we see the full Tiger Woods documentary. You know, we love to build up our stars and tear them down, and then we love to see a comeback story.
Although I think Michael Vick tore himself down. I mean, let's tell the story. You guys are great at documenting what a terrific athlete he was.
His athleticism was just breathtaking. You know, when he burst on the scene, both high school and then at Virginia Tech, he just dominated. He showed such an incredible combination of strength, speed, arm strength to throw the ball 70 yards down the field. I mean, that collection and combination of size, strength, speed, and ability to throw arm power had not been seen. A lot of the previous mobile quarterbacks were smaller, more elusive. He combined all of these things, and it blew people away, his incredible combination of athleticism.
And he had it as a kid. I mean, you guys, it's so cool. You have the moment where one of his coaches said, oh, my God, he's an NFL player, and it was a juke in a move. He was going down the sideline. Somebody was going to pin him. He went about three ways in half a second, and they just went, oh, that was an NFL move.
Yes, his coach said, the next time you make that move will be on Sundays. Just seeing that ability and the way he exploded, he just said, you know, I'm looking at an NFL player right in front of me, and he's only in 11th or 12th grade.
Fast forward to his NFL career. What did he sign for? Was he the first-round pick? Did he explode onto the NFL scene?
Absolutely. You know, first-round pick of the Falcons. By the time he was 23, he had taken the Falcons to a playoff game. He shocked, you know, the Packers in Green Bay, where they never lost in the playoffs. I mean, by the time he was 23 years old, he was the toast of the NFL, redefining the position. Fame had come with it, celebrity. You know, the ride was very quick for Michael.
One of his cousins or friends got arrested. They had some pot. They said, where are you from? He said, I stay on the Vick estate there in kind of rural Virginia. What? What's he got a place out there for? They go out there and discover this enormous dog compound. And it is there that he was keeping and training dogs for fighting. Is that right?
Absolutely. And and I think that's the one thing we wanted to capture in this, taking a very fair and balanced approach to show the incredible athlete that Michael was, and then to show the criminal and inhumane things that were going on, and then how prison impacted him and what came afterwards. For his people who were around him, including Aaron Brooks, who is his cousin and a former NFL quarterback with the Saints, I mean, he saw the bad things coming, and he tried to mentor Michael and tell him that he needed not to get caught up in this rush of fame. And even when Michael was with the Falcons, he was flying home many weekends or weeks just to go back to the Bad News kennels and be surrounded by this world of dogfighting.
And then would they bet on the fights? Is that what the purpose of it was?
Absolutely. You know, large sums of money would be transacted in these illegal gambling ventures. And one of the things we tried to point out from very early on in Michael's life, and in no way does it defend what occurred, but he grew up in a poor community, a housing complex, and there were no pets allowed at the complex. And so it was not unusual to see strays adopted by the complex. And in that same culture and community, it wasn't unusual to see dog fighting. And so many people we spoke to said that culturally it was treated very differently. It doesn't defend his actions. They're still criminal and inhumane, but they were a little bit more accepted from the background he came from.
Well, you got his cousin. I think this is just one of the most jaw-dropping things in the documentary. You got his cousin to say this.
I thought it was unfair, unjustified. I thought he was being made an example. We come from a culture, we see dogs as dogs. Dogs. We don't treat them like humans. We don't put sweaters on them. You know what I mean? We might throw a collar or a chain on them. But we see them as dogs. That's what they are.
It's unfair to our culture, you know what I mean? Because now you saying that your culture, you better than us because you don't fight dogs or you haven't done anything bad with the dog or whatever, whatever.
Did Michael Vick think what he was doing was wrong, Joe?
Absolutely. I mean, he said that. He, you know, he was very remorseful. He's worked hard to turn a negative into a positive and be an agent of change. But he flat out admitted that he got caught up in something where when it's going on, you kind of have a sense it's wrong, but it just sweeps you up and carries you away, and you get caught up in the activity, and it's tough to really balance what you know in your heart to be true and wrong and take the appropriate action.
Joe Iannarello is on a phone line. He is the editor-in-chief at Bleacher Report. If you go to bleacherreport.com/Vic, you can watch this documentary. Where is Michael Vick now? Is he still playing? Has he truly renounced his dogfighting past?
He's working very hard lobbying on multiple animal cruelty pitches. As he puts it, he wants to be an agent of change, and if he can turn this negative into a positive, he will say that he's done right to correct many of the wrongs. Right now, he is an NFL free agent. However, I will say during the course of the 5 to 6 months we spent around him, he spoke very little about football and much more about how he could become an agent of change. There are rumblings he could sign with a team like the Seattle Seahawks, but I don't know that that's the emphasis of the rest of his life.
And you talk about him playing chess. I mean, remember now, he goes to jail for 2 years. He's in Leavenworth for almost 24 months. He gets out. We all debated then, well, if the man's done the crime but also done the time, then maybe he should be treated as not a pariah but somebody who should, you know, have a chance to earn a living again. But he was toxic. A lot of people said you can't have Michael Vick on your team. What does that say about your organization? And so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think that was one of the most compelling aspects of this for us. I mean, we even debated this in our newsroom. Does someone like Michael deserve a second chance? For many people, they can't separate that criminal inhumane act, and they can't move past it, and they don't believe he does. For other people, they see he paid his penance, he fulfilled his time, and he seems remorseful and trying to move on and turn a negative into a positive. So it's a very interesting debate among people whether they feel like he deserves a second chance. Hmm.
Joe Iannarello and his new documentary about Michael Vick, you can see at bleacherreport.com/Vick. But he said, you know, this sort of movie, it's a Shakespearean narrative, isn't it? Where the person gains fame, they're at the top of their game, then they have this mighty fall, then we build them back up or they sort of reclaim themselves. And it's just a really interesting movie for that. And if it wasn't about Michael Vick, he said, I'm waiting for the Tiger Woods movie. A version of this yet needs to be lived and made. And the list goes on. You also just have to laugh, too. Michael Wilbon is in the movie talking about Michael Vick. And Wilbon even talks about the cultural difference. He said dogfighting in some neighborhoods is not the horrific thing that you would imagine it is. It is. It is. It's dogfighting. But they don't see it that way. And when his cousin in the documentary says, we don't put sweaters on them, I had to laugh because he said, we just see them as dogs. Even if you do that, I don't know how you see, how you justify, how you enable yourself to let them fight. You
we
know,
see them as dogs and let and train them to kill each other brutally know, and bet money on it.
There's a flaw in that logic, I know. But I wasn't able to play all of the conversation back to you, but we were talking about how that cousin of Vic's, he was seemed like a nice guy, you know, able to sit up, take fluids, a very conversant, friendly, intelligent fella. And he was as mystified by, say, my view on dogs as I am on his. He just doesn't get it. He goes, I don't understand you people putting sweaters on your dogs, treating them like human beings. He says, they're dogs. Who, as Bob Kessler points out, we trained to fight to the death. It's 1:48. All right, we'll pause here. Amy Krauss Rosenthal is going to join us soon. She is she's amazing. She's got a textbook out about her life, and her book that I first discovered is The Encyclopedia of Me, My Life from A to Z. You know her for many unique projects. She's got another one coming up, so she's going to join us in the next hour here on WGN. It's 1:53. Amy Krauss Rosenthal is in the green room. Her new book, I mentioned it was kind of a textbook. In fact, the title of it is Textbook Amy Krauss Rosenthal by the author of Encyclopedia of an Ordinary Life, subtitled Not Exactly a Memoir. She has a way with words and with presentation. She's a performance artist of sorts. She's going to be in our studio. She has another performance. You'll want to hear about this and maybe take part. Just a couple of minutes here before the news. I said early this year that Donald Trump will not win the nomination a long time ago. If he does, I said, I'll, air quotes now, wash your camper. That became my mantra. It was sort of a defiant statement. I'll wash your camper. I said it often on the radio show that I do in Minnesota. You've probably heard me say that on the podcast I do with Kristen McQuarrie, Steve Bertrand, and Eric Zorn. We call it the Mincing Rascals. Normally in this half hour, we do the Mincing Rascals presentation, and we do talk politics in that one segment. We didn't play that back today, though you can listen to that podcast at WGNplus.com, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But because the events were moving so fast at the convention, what we actually laid down for the podcast we thought was already a little dated for this broadcast. But I would often say it, I'll wash your camper if Trump becomes the nominee. The RNC this week was an uneven affair, and the only question Thursday night was, would Donald Trump save it from itself with some sort of terrific speech? The convention started, you recall, at the first gavel with a protest over the adoption of the rules. The Colorado delegation walked off. Then Melania Trump's speech came along. She lifted words from Michelle Obama's. If the Trump team knew what had happened there, they didn't say so for over a day. And just when they were putting that story to bed, Ted Cruz took everyone on a hashtag booze cruise, hashtag Ted wedding. It eclipsed Mike Pence's speech, and to cap off how disjointed things were, Trump whiffed on his kiss to his new running mate. Did you see that?
Yes.
That was so strange.
They kissed the space a few inches in front of his forehead.
He just kind of missed, and Pence didn't know it was coming. I think they should have worked it out in advance. Like, all right, when I come out, are we going to do the exploding fist? Are we going to do the half hug, half shake, bring it in, bro? How are we going to do this? But since they don't know each other that well, they certainly don't know each other's body language. So that was, as the kids say, awkward. The chant, lock her up, gained traction. And then amidst all of the clouds, Ivanka Trump took to the stage on Thursday night. Chelsea Clinton, if you're listening, game on. Donald Trump gave the longest speech then in American history, eclipsing the Lincoln-Douglas debates by 43 minutes. He may still be giving it. He was red in the face as he fired up the crowds, convinced as they left the arena that their cars were parked in a world of Mad Max. And I was unsettled after the speech. I tried to text during Mr. Trump's speech with a family member and another good friend of mine, and they were both really impressed with the speech Donald Trump gave. They noted how powerful it was. It may have persuaded one of them, I know, to now vote for the Republican. I said it was horrifying, and I turned off my phone. And I watched some of the post-debate coverage. And then, still kind of sad about what I saw, I went for a walk. It was midnight. And I roamed my neighborhood streets for about a half an hour. If someone looked at me suspiciously, I planned to tell them I was looking for Pokemon. Some time has lapsed now. That was Thursday night, and I feel a little better today. But I'm no more certain about the outcome of this upcoming election than I was when I erroneously said that Trump would not win the nomination. Because yesterday, I was washing campers. Thursday night, Trump accepted the nomination, and Friday morning, in an RV parking lot in Minnesota, for 6 hours, I and some volunteers washed campers and RVs and trucks and minivans and bicycles. One guy was so eager to sort of cash in his chip that he showed up in his minivan that had the back window knocked out. I mean, we're going to wash it with hoses and soap and wash the car. There's no back window of this thing. It was an old beat-up van, and he said, I haul scrap metal, and the thing got busted out. There was no glass in the back of his vehicle. We washed that one. A guy pulled up in a 60th anniversary mint-condition Corvette that sells for $92,000. He wanted me to wash that, and my team of kids, we had some volunteers. Some kids said, okay, because I couldn't wash all the campers myself. Nothing would got done. So we had some volunteers. And when the kids with the hoses and the brushes saw a white Corvette pull up, and it was a convertible, but the top was up, they were like, oh, we'll wash that one. And I said, get away from the Corvette. Nobody, I said, do not squirt the Corvette. The guy got out and he goes, yeah, how about it, kids? Wash the car.
What year was it?
It was in 2016 or 2013, oh, but cool. It was the 60th anniversary edition of the Corvette. Oh. And there were not many of them made. And one of them pulls in, rah, rah, rah. And I go, oh, no, no, turn around, Will Robinson. Do not come here. The guy came there. We washed his Corvette. So I had to pay that back. I've learned, if nothing else, that whenever I want to say something that I think is, you know, really pronounced, I'll say, if that happens, I'll, but I'm not going to say, wash your camper anymore, because that's what I did in the heat. And in fact, God's way of telling me that I'm not so smart after all is that he made it 102 degrees on the tarmac where we were washing it yesterday. Don't ask me what's going to happen. The Mincing Rascals talk politics in this segment, and we'll be back at that next week. Amy Krauss Rosenthal is in the green room. She is one of my, sorry, Amy, favorite Chicagoans, but she really is. I don't want to diss any other Chicagoans out there that I happen to be good friends with as well. We'll have a visit with her after the news, and the news is next on WGN. Thank you, Bob Kessler. This is John Williams, 209. Bob and I will talk a little bit more about the Teddy Roosevelt show I want you to come to. But in our studio right now is Amy Krauss Rosenthal, who has written a number of books, I think over 30 children's books, books for adults. She does things, too. Her latest is textbook Amy Krauss Rosenthal by the author of The Encyclopedia of an Ordinary Life, and then subtitled, not exactly. What is the title of this book, woman? What are you doing here? There's all of these words.
It's a lot of words. I'm trying to confuse you.
No, you
I think
you inspire and delight. Textbooks Amy Krauss Rosenthal. Welcome back. I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah.
So what is this latest project, Amy?
Oh, you want me to talk about the book?
Well, what do you want to talk
kidding.
About?
I'm kidding. Textbook Amy Krauss Rosenthal is the culmination of the last many years, and it is a book about being human. It's not exactly a memoir, so what I mean by that is that I'm writing about me, yes, some of the time, but I'm also writing about us, like being humans, and the word memoir is a little tricky. I keep thinking that if I could take the first two letters off the word, me, take that out, we could just call it a moir. That would be more accurate.
Well, when I heard that you had written this book, and I thought, well, she sort of did an autobiographical piece in your Encyclopedia of an Ordinary Life. And I thought, and you know, I was just telling you off the air how I thought, okay, I'm going to work on my writing skills this year. And I thought, I should just do what Amy did. I'll just write about passages and memories and then weave them together somehow. And that one of the things you did in your Encyclopedia of an Ordinary Life. And it's hard to do. But your book, the previous one, was sort of organized like an encyclopedia, right?
Yep.
And so give us an example. I mean, what would a passage be from your previous book from that one?
Oh, my gosh. Well, maybe I can give you an example of this book. And I also want to back up for a second because, like, the thing about writing those short pieces and you acknowledge how hard it is, which feels good because the book is not carpeted in wall-to-wall sentences, right? It's got some open space. There are a lot of pages where there's just a few words on the page. So that was very intentional to make the book is intended to be a different kind of reading experience. But I was going to say, it makes me think about when I was first starting this kind of writing, these short pieces, seemingly random, but then finding a way to connect them together. I didn't know if that counted as writing. You know, like, is this real? And then I stumbled upon Say Shonigan, who wrote this incredible book called The Pillow Book in the year 1002. And it was a collection of musings, random musings, happy, sad, serious, not serious, everything in between. And when I saw that, I was like, okay, like this counts. So here we are 14 years later.
A lot of years.
And I think I'm doing that. And interestingly enough, we both share a love of a certain word in Japanese. The word is okashi, and that translates in English the word lovely.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Was that a coincidence?
Coincidence.
Really? So your beckoning of lovely event was also just a interesting coincidence or kismet or something, right?
Something like that.
Wow. So while that one book sort of told your story of your life, your anecdotes, your stories, your musings, but very biographical, right?
Absolutely.
This yes. one is a different kind of book. This is organized like the way a textbook would be, right?
Yeah, sort of. So it's the title works on multiple levels. Textbook Amy Cross Rosenthal. The first level is that yes, like the subject, the chapters are subjects in school, social studies, math, art, language arts, music, and I use those as general riffing points to write about life and. Yeah.
But you're not telling your story all the time so much.
Yeah, sometimes I'm telling things about my life, and other times I'm just talking about something I've noticed. And then,
keep going.
Sorry. And then the other part of it is that while making fun of myself in the title, like, oh, that's so textbook Amy to come up with another, you know, device kind of book. So I got that out of the way. I made fun of myself before everybody else could. And then this element I'm so super excited about. So it's the first book in the history of the world, I think it's fair to say, unless there's someone doing this in some small country I haven't heard yet, it has a text messaging component. So textbook works on that level. The book has a phone number. It's like totally, this is all up and running. We figured it out. We worked on it for a year. This is like a real thing. The book has a phone number. Throughout the book, you text these different words and you, the reader, get things back. You might text a word and get back a song that goes with a section, or you text and you get an audio clip or a video. And then also it works the other way. You, the reader, sometimes get asked questions, like you've just read this chapter on serendipity. And then I say, do you have a serendipity story? And you can send something back. And that all gets funneled to textbookamykr.com, which is this online companion for the book.
Wow.
And it's all working. It's there.
It's functional, too.
Yeah. It's like this global community of trying to connect people.
That's kind of been a theme for years, finding a global community, finding a way to connect people.
I think I'm kind of into that.
Yeah. This is ambitious, though. I mean, it's enough to write a book, but does anybody just go, Amy, just write a book? You don't have to, like, reinvent the wheel every time you do.
I wish somebody said that to me. That would have been a lot easier.
So, yeah, I've never heard of such a thing. So there's it's an interactive analog book.
Yes, it is. It looks, I mean, you can see. It's a regular
book.
Hardcover book.
Yeah,
it
no
looks
kidding.
And feels and breathes like a book. But yes, it has this text messaging component, which, you know, hopefully it feels really seamless and natural and like, oh, yeah, this is not even like a thing.
But read to me a couple passages from or pages from the book. I mean, so it's organized, like you said, like the subjects are social studies, romance languages, math. So tell me the section and tell me what
you wrote. All right, I'll read a couple. And also, by the way, you don't have to do the texting. The book works fine without it. So I'll read maybe like a couple that are different moods. We could start with in geography.
Okay.
That woman stepping out of the shower sure is hairy. My last thought before realizing I had walked into the men's locker room. Yeah, that was true. Okay, social studies.
Okay, no, wait, that actually happened to you?
Yeah, everything in here that is real.
Oh, true. I thought that was just sort of a general random observation. It was a quip.
No, that was...
That's your story.
That happened.
But then there's not like 18 pages retelling that story there.
That's story.
And why is that under geography and not, I don't know,
like location,
anatomy?
Like,
oh, right, yes. Hello.
I use it loosely,
Got it. No, that's okay. I'm a slow learner.
Go ahead. We want to be literal. I can read one from math. Here's one in the math section. Radiant plus redolent plus gorgeous plus melancholy plus patina plus rhapsody plus calm equals words I kept trying to find a home for in this book.
You love those words.
I like those words.
Give me another one.
Social studies. Just look at us, all of us, quietly doing our thing and trying to matter. The earnestness is inspiring and heartbreaking at the same time.
So do you imagine people reading your book, these personally inspired thoughts of yours, and then what are they doing with it beyond the texting? I mean, then maybe they're reflecting on that and relating it to themselves too.
Yeah, at the beginning of the book, there are two words that were in my head as I was putting this book together, and that I wanted the book for the reader to feel beautiful and useful. Like it had to be both those things. So I tried my best to provide an experience that at the end of the day would somehow matter to them. And part of that is from the interactive element and what the community that is there, and there's a way to be matched with your fellow reader on the website. Like I figured if you're reading the same book as somebody else, you're going to have at least that in common. And so there's a whole matching thing where you can be matched with two other readers and then see what happens and all kinds of stuff like that I was trying to give the reader something, and I hope some of it is just from the prose. And yeah,
give me another chapter or heading and observation.
All right. Well, here, this kind of goes with what we're talking about. This is at the closing of the book under what's called end notes, and this section begins where you can text. If you text the word end notes to the book's phone number, you get a piece of music that goes with this section. Okay, so you have to imagine some pretty music playing right now. If you were happy before you opened this book, you are probably still happy. If you were medium fine before, you are probably still generally existentially A-okay. In both cases, I hope my thoughts have served as a handy amplifier to your own soulful interior humming and strumming. However, if you were sad or troubled before, and that feeling has not eased at all, I am sorry. I wish this had made everything all right. Tell me what I can do, and help me to understand, because I'm guessing here, and I'm ready, and we don't have much time.
So do you expect people will respond to that? Like, are they going to reach out to you and say, hey, Amy, it's the book didn't work for me, whatever, blah, 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 blah.
They're welcome to.
Is this sort of a genre-breaking thing, too? I mean, this sort of...
I sure hope so. Can we just claim it as such?
I know. I was about to say something bold and pronounced like that, but I thought, well, that's probably what the New York Times has already said. Are they regarding it as such? Did your publisher say, wow, this is taking us in a new direction, that sort of thing?
I mean, I'd like to... I hope the book is going to stand on its own as just being a book, and then the layer that we've just talked about with the text messaging and the community and the way that it works with the website and all that stuff, yes, it has never been done before. Does that add to the book's worth? I hope so, and I hope it adds to the reader's experience, and I hope it is this like great new thing.
But at the end of the day, it's probably the prose that matters, right? I mean, that's it has to be interesting thoughts. It has to be good writing. It still has to be good storytelling or whatever the craft is in writing.
Yeah. And I hope that the reader will come to it with the – it's a different kind of book. If you judge it against a typical normal book, it's not going to equate, right? It's a different thing.
Hmm.
Yeah. Should we talk about the book launch on August 9th?
Okay, yeah. Whatever you want to do, Amy, I'm here for you.
What else do you want to?
Well, I have to play a commercial first.
Let's do a commercial.
If that's okay with you, because if it's not, we won't.
Actually, I was hoping we'd do a commercial.
It's 2:20. We will. Amy Krauss Rosenthal is in our studio. This is WGN. This is WGN Radio. Amy Krauss Rosenthal, the Chicagoan's latest book is Textbook. Amy Krauss Rosenthal, not exactly a memoir, more brilliant personal thoughts of hers that you can and cannot relate to. And it's organized like a book might be or a textbook might be with different categories, the things you and I studied in school, social studies and science and romance languages. In the category social studies, think about it in this literal sense there, mundane highs and lows. Mm-hmm. Okay, can I read this one?
Sure.
So you've got a graph. And it would look like maybe the stock market on a crazy day, you know, up, down, up, down. Here's a down. Realize I pressed recorded video when I meant to take a photo. But on the upswing, arrive at crosswalk with lots of seconds left on the walk sign. That is always like a good little, oh.
Yes, totally. It's awesome.
And then it goes down, ugh, out of Parmesan cheese. You probably got the hot pasta right there and now you don't have it. But then on the uptick, that thing I totally didn't want to do just got canceled. Oh, that is such a good feeling. I had that happen to me not that long ago, and I was like, I am so happy for this random gift. But then way down, receive another forgive the mass email everyone email. Yeah. On the upside, AT&T repairman diagnoses the problem. We end up chatting about life and art. Do you really? I mean, do you sometimes talk up those people?
Well, no, that happened, and that was like a really good, that was a good moment. We had this great talk by
people.
The door.
He was physically there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was.
Oh, yeah, it's the AT&T repairman. Yeah. He's there. Mm-hmm. But when I talk to a lot of repair people that's on the phone, I'm trying to get them to tell me how to reboot my TV or something like that. And I do like to talk to them a little bit. On the downswing, printer makes that croaky, abrasive, out of paper sound. And then way on the upswing, Shawshank's on. Yeah. That's perfect. That's
mundane highs and lows.
In the chapter of social studies. And that's our lives, all of us. So you got the book launch of this book coming up here in Chicago at the Bean, right?
Yes. I'm really excited. We decided to do something different, kind of hearkening back to The Beckoning of Lovely, tying that together with this book. So the idea is on August 9th, which is 8:09. From 8:09 a.m. to 8:09 p.m. that day, I will be hanging out at that gigantic picnic table by the Bean. And you can bring a book and I'll sign it. You can bring a picnic lunch and we'll chat. You can bring a ukulele and we'll sing. You can bring earbuds. We can do the interactive texting thing together. That'll be fun. I have some other surprises planned. I'm really excited about it. Of course, I'll be the one with the yellow umbrella. And another nice element is that there's a way for you to have a copy of the book waiting for you at the Bean that day. So it's through Barbara's Bookstore. And if you pre-order with Barbara's, and this is all on my website, textbookamykr.com. Very easy, super simple. You can pre-order it, and it will be waiting there in a waterproof box for you that day.
For those who don't know what The Beckoning of Lovely was and why the Bean matters to you, I mean, at least your own personal history here, what was The Beckoning of Lovely?
Well,
that's hard to describe, isn't it?
Yeah. I'll do my best. I'll give it my best effort, and then you can tell. You were there. You're part of the video. People can watch The Beckoning of Lovely online. It's a YouTube video. So it was on 8:08, August 8th of 2008. At 8:08 p.m., so you see the connection with the numbers here. And I invited people to come to the Bean, and it was kind of cryptic, right? We're gonna make something together. There's a longer story, but that's the essence of it, right? We're gonna meet up and we're gonna make something together. And put this video invitation out there. This was in the early YouTube days, so,
right? It was a video invitation.
Yeah, it was a video invitation. Come to the Bean. And people were like, huh, what is this thing? I thought maybe 30 people would show up. And as you recall, I walked in at 8:08 with my yellow umbrella, and there were hundreds of people. And that got filmed and launched as the video of Beckoning of Lovely, starring John Williams.
Yeah.
My buddy John Green was there.
Yeah.
And he's been an incredible part of that whole project. And so, and the Bean has become a special place for me. I continue to go there each year. I went back on 90909 and 101010. And did an 11-11. This is a different kind of thing. This is not the Beckoning of Lovely, but it hopefully will be beckoning some lovely. And it's more like a 12-hour open house.
But I don't have to have prearranged. Like, can I just come by and say, hey?
Yeah.
I mean, what if I don't play the ukulele? This is not performance per se. Just show up and say hi. Be part of whatever you've got up your sleeve over there.
We're gonna just share the day. It can be 5 minutes. It can be 20 minutes. Someone can stay a few hours.
Can I buy the book there without having pre-ordered it from Barbara's? Will you have some there?
I can't sell at the... You can't sell
I was going to say, yeah. They have rules over there.
Exactly.
In fact, do they know what you're up to?
Oh, yeah,
because
yeah.
I can't imagine...
This is all cleared with
them. Yes. I can't imagine they've checked off on all of this, Amy.
Yes, they did. They're all good. So that's why it's like the pre-order before, and then I'll have it there, but I can't sell on site.
Understood.
But it's 2 blocks away if someone wants to run over and get it, and hopefully everybody will do that.
They should. The book is fun. It's imaginative. It's earth-breaking and earth's ground-breaking and earth-shattering. You're making a squishy face. I think this is really ambitious. I think this is really fun.
It is
exhausting,
it was,
too.
It was an incredible journey. It was. I have said all along. I doubt I'll ever have an idea like this again. You know.
Your publisher's probably hoping you won't. Actually, a lot of publishers were interested in this work, right?
They were.
Okay.
Dutton is. Yeah.
So, give me the website you want people to go to,
okay.
Or what do you want people to know as we leave?
Well, the website again is textbookamykr.com. And I guess I could tell you also, how many seconds do I have?
42.
Okay. If you can't make it to the Bean or just in general, I have an offer on my website that says if you text me, I'll text you back a personal note to tuck inside your book. So that's a different number that's in the book, but I can tell you what that number is, and I will personally text you back. It's
772-932-5016.
And I guess I'll close by saying the whole intention of this book is, we all know this. 1 minute you're giggling, 1 minute you receive dreadful news and you're sobbing, the next minute you get the hiccups. I did my best to create a narrative, a reading experience that reflects this truth.
Hmm. I think that's a nice summary. The title of the book is?
Textbook Amy Krauss Rosenthal.
Good luck. Okay, on the 9th from 8:09 to 8:09 at the Bean, downtown Chicago. Amy Krauss Rosenthal. News is next on WGN. Baby, I don't need dollar bills to have fun tonight. Baby, I don't need dollar bills to have fun tonight. 2:39. Let's live with this a little bit, Griff. Go ahead and crank it for us here. Let's hear what we got. This is our Vibe Score segment, 2:39 on WGN. I'm John Williams. Vibe Score is an app that a man named Tom Hegberg, my cousin, and I developed. You can get it for free. Vibe Score is one word. You select categories that you're interested in, news, music, TV, sports, Chicago sports. We feed you stories about it. And at the end of each story, we ask you a scorable question. So in the music category, you're asked this week to score. What was that there, Griff? What are we listening to?
Cheap Thrills by Sia. It's a new song from Sia. She had that big hit, and it might have been a Grammy winner, called Chandelier.
Oh, yeah, right. That was her.
She never shows her face and wears that wig. That's her.
It is so... I'm sorry, I'm about to show my age already into the first Vibe Score topic. That is so bizarre. That is so weird that she does that. I've seen her, and I thought, Don't people think, you know, this is ridiculous? It's a bit. It's either a singer or you're not a singer. What's with this wig thing?
I think it's fun. I don't know. It's like, that's her thing. So, you remembered her.
I do.
I think you would have if she didn't have the wig. And
well, hey, honey, I'll tell you what. If you want to be a singer, you got to be able to sing. That's what matters. It's not these props and all of this nonsense you're doing here.
And she can, I think. And I like this new song, again, called Cheap Thrills.
Cheap Thrills by Sia. Yeah, that was pretty good, actually. That one worked for me.
I always regret my first score. I gave it, like, 65, and now I'm ready to bump it up to 75, maybe higher.
Wow, well, you can change it on Vibe Score.
Bob Kessler in the newsroom is going to join us. Bob, what do you think of that one? No.
So what I say a lot of music I hear, it's gym music. It's just something I would hear at the gym in the locker room and just pass it off. I do like Sia's image. I think it's cool. I actually like the wig thing. I like people who have fun with their presentation. That I like better than her music.
Like a Lady Gaga, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we all said, what is this nonsense? Gaga's for real.
If they're talented, that can just be more of the fun.
And if they're not untalented, but I just don't really like
it. If you are not talented, then it gets to be extra annoying. But for me, I like it.
Yeah, works for you, huh?
Yeah, Bob's having a tough summer because I'm just playing all like the biggest songs of summer.
And he hasn't liked one of them.
And so it's just not going to be any good for a while. wait another month and then we'll get back into something.
Hey, Bob,
something
do you
else.
Think maybe it's you?
It's not me. It's completely me. I mean, it's totally me.
I'm going to give it I'm going to give that an 80, Griff. I thought that was pretty good. Why are you laughing at me?
I'm laughing because I give it an 82. I agree with you, but you go high for every song that we start with. You always feel great at the top of the segment. Everything's getting a... Why not?
Well,
and I'm with you.
Okay, well, good, good. Let's see if I can maintain that positive juju here. What's next?
Absolutely. In TV category, the new Netflix series Stranger Things has become a big hit since the first season premiered 2 weeks ago. Or, you know, less than 2 weeks ago. It's barely been out, but people are talking about it a lot. It's a throwback to 1980s sci-fi, starring Winona Ryder and a huge cast of lesser-known actors. But
this is called Stranger Things.
Stranger Things.
I haven't seen this one yet, so I'm not going to score on it, but I knew that Winona Ryder had something out there.
Yeah.
The one that I'm kind of really into right now is that TV show called The Night Of.
Yeah.
Which is just stressful.
Right.
Have you been watching this? Is Stranger Things good?
Stranger Things is really good. But The Night Of, I haven't started yet. I'm excited to start. I've heard it's great.
Yeah, it is.
But it's not fun.
Does anybody do sitcoms anymore?
See, okay, I think... Now, if I told you what the show is about, you might think it's another dark show like that, but I think Stranger Things might be the antidote.
Really?
To all the darkness in your TV watching. It's really fun.
Okay. I'll tell Ray Donovan we've got a new show.
It's getting an 81 right now. I'm around there for it. It's like kids looking for their lost friend, and they kind of band together, and they've got a plan, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of throwback to, like, E.T. Spielberg, you know, things like
no
that.
No kidding.
So it's pretty fun.
I'm up for that. All right. So that TV show
Bob,
is called...
have you seen it? Or
I haven't seen it, but I've heard a lot of people say a lot of good things about it. So maybe I'll get into the binge thing.
It's 8 episodes. I'm... like halfway through.
Oh,
right
yeah, they've dropped the whole season. I can watch it all right now.
Can watch
right?
it all right now. A lot of people did. Yeah.
Okay, give me another one.
Okay, in Chicago sports, Cubs are still in first. We check in every week. How are you feeling about the Cubs this week?
Yeah,
still rolling along in the second half. So, what is your score right now?
My Vibe score for the Cubs was a 90. I think I did this one today.
Okay, because you were low.
Well, you know, because they were sucking it up at the end of the first half, and the rest did Arrieta some good. It seems like we got our team back here.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling the love again.
You know what's weird is that usually you've been way lower than our actual score. This time, it's getting a 67 right now.
I know that.
I was surprised to see that.
Well, but if you look at the scores, it's like a 97, a 95. The Cubs fans are there. And then just people drop some bombs in the room and left. There's like some, you know, tens and fives. And that's just Cardinal fans. It's just haters
that
got the app.
You don't know that. Everybody has a voice on Vibe Score.
Actually, you know what? I mentioned this app on a radio show I did in St. Louis this week.
There you go.
I may have sabotaged
our
own Cubs vibe. 67. The Cubs are definitely a 90.
These Cardinal fans are ruining my life. Okay. In the viral category, the First Lady jammed Stevie Wonder on carpool karaoke with James Corden on his late night show. You know, she's one of many to do it. That segment has featured Lin-Manuel Miranda from Hamilton and Adele.
Adele
One Direction,
huge,
a million others. Yeah. What'd you think of it?
I thought it was really good. I thought it was fun. You know, they jammed to a Stevie Wonder song. Then they have a pretty honest conversation in this absurd setting. And then who did they pick up? Who got in the car with them?
It was Missy Elliott.
Yeah, right.
Because they were listening to a Missy Elliott song. And then all of a sudden, there she is in the back seat. That was really fun.
And that the First Lady of the United States can pull that off.
I noticed that the Missy Elliott song was really wordy. You know, it's a rap. And it's, she's got a lot packed in there. And I thought, I don't think Michelle Obama knows all these words.
Oh, really? Do you think it might be inappropriate for her?
No. I just mean, I thought she was skipping over some because she's got other things to do than learn this entire rap. But
well, he said he has to learn some of the songs that he does. He doesn't know them all that well, so he crams for some of them.
I believe it, yeah.
You can't know everybody's song to everything, you know?
And be actually good at singing it. It's one thing to know it, but...
By the way, just random thing about songs. Did you notice that after Trump got the nomination, the song, the walk-off song they play is the Rolling Stones' You Can't Always Get What You Want?
Yeah.
And I was like... It's a great sounding song. It's images well, but the words are really weird for that moment. I don't know if they thought it through or not.
Yeah, I don't know if they were just going for the sound because, yeah, it's nice culminating big
soaring
song.
Yeah, but it's like, but yeah. If you listen to the words, I don't think they mean that. Anyway, all right, so what are we getting for the First Lady's jam with Carpool Karaoke?
It's getting a 78.
That's, you know, actually,
no, it's fun.
That's about... Right. I mean, yeah. Those jams don't all, or karaoke sessions don't always get great scores. That's a pretty good score for that category.
They all end up about the same, right? They're all fun.
What do you got next?
In news and current events, how about we go there? Pokemon Go. Now, we talked about Pokemon Go last week.
Yeah.
I don't think we did it on Vibe Score, though.
What's the Vibe Score for Pokemon Go?
62.
62 it's getting?
Yeah, what do you think of that?
I think that's wrong. I think it should be like an 89.
Clearly being scored by people who aren't playing. I'm not playing either, so I kind of sat it out.
I think people just go, ah, they're so dismissive of this stupid thing. Everybody's doing it. It's like, what is this, the Macarena now? It'll fade. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a great idea. I mean, people are walking off cliffs and dying, but...
Maybe turns people off. I don't know.
You think? All right, give us one more, Griff.
Okay, well, in movies, the movies category, now after a lot of talk and a long rollout, the Ghostbusters remake is now in theaters.
Yeah.
And it had a pretty good opening weekend. It could have been better. Definitely could have been worse at the box office. So it stars Kristen Wiig, Leslie Jones, Melissa McCarthy, and Kate McKinnon. Have you seen it? What do you think?
Yeah, I haven't, so I won't vibe on it yet. What is it getting?
It's getting a 74. There's not many votes in yet, though.
This is one of those movies I'm shocked to find out it's just now been released. You know, sometimes there's movies...
I know.
The ramp to it, it's too long, and I think they miss the sort of excitement when they first got the idea. So maybe that worked against it.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of promotion. I think it's doing well, and it's sort of mixed reviews, but generally positive. It's about 75 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is it?
Richard Roper gave it 1 star. Manola Dargis in the New York Times gave it a positive review. So it's really hard to know how to feel going in. And
yeah.
I saw it, and I liked it. I didn't love it like I've loved the director Paul Feig's previous movie, Spy, and Bridesmaids and The Heat, which also features some of the same stars. And those are just some of my favorite comedies.
Those are really good.
They're so great. So I was very excited. And I didn't like it as much as those. But I realized that my expectations were a little off. This is PG-13. It has to be a little bit more geared to kids. And so once I realized that that is what it was for, I had a great time watching it. It's really fun.
By the way, in the laugh category, we put the Gary Gulman monologue up from Conan where he talks about the post office turning all of the states into two-letter abbreviations. I think that is one of the funniest things we have sampled on Vibe Score. I just think, don't you think that's a funny bit?
Yeah, that's why I put it up.
I think it's really clever.
I thought, oh, Gary Gulman, you know, he's been around forever.
Don't know this guy.
He's been a stand-up comedian for a long, long time, and it's never really broken out like Amy Schumer, you know, the way comedians, Louis C.K., things like that. But he's really funny, and he's really good at doing stand-up comedy. It's getting a 68, so not everybody loves it.
Oh, come on, go get Vibe Score, watch this thing, and ramp that up, because that is a funny bit. You'll be glad you did.
I thought it was very fun.
I'm going 90 on that one.
Thank you, Bob.
Great.
Thank you, Bob. Bob is such the team player. It's 2:49. We'll pause here. Remember, Vibe Score is one word. It's a free app. You can get it at the App Store. And we will feed you news and stories, videos and music that are of interest to you. At each post, you get a scorable question at the end. And that is the Vibe score. It's 249, 250 now. Boys from the Beat come in, talk a little sports. And one last note about our Teddy Roosevelt show coming up on WGN. What's going on, Mark Carmen? How are you, man?
John, I'm great. Good to see you. Love being in studio with you. You look adorable and very, very talented in how you dress for a wedding as well.
Even as we have this conversation, Sam's like, is this what you guys always do? I am putting cufflinks into a shirt sleeve.
I struggle with cufflinks in general. He's putting them on 50,000 watts.
How about them apples?
Well, you've been doing this three times, a lady, once or twice on the old radio for you, so this is nothing new. Who's getting married? What's going on?
A friend of, one of my son's friends is getting married, so we are heading out to the wedding in a little while. By the way, you know, I do sound a little distracted now because I'm fiddling with this cufflink. I saw Garrison Keillor do Prairie Home Companion about a year ago. He walked onto stage. He didn't have his belt on. And so somebody in the middle of the stage, the whole place is packed. Somebody walks out and gives a belt. He unzips his pants, tucks his shirt in, puts the belt on.
That's fantastic.
As he's doing the live radio show, Prairie Home Companion. What are you guys doing on your show today?
Well, hold on a second. Is it worth a trip to see Prairie Home Companion? No? Wow.
Is that on your bucket list of things to do?
Yes, it's like a little guilty pleasure.
Because he stopped doing it, you know. I mean, he's not going to be doing it anymore.
Completely done? There's no version of it. There's no anything.
He pops up once in a while, but it's not his show anymore. I think he's done.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry about that.
No, I blew it. I loved the movie.
Yeah.
Solid film.
Go see Hamilton with that guy. Oh, no, wait. He's not doing it anymore.
He's gone.
Never mind. Yeah. So
bigger and better things. I heard a TV show maybe in the works.
No kidding.
Yeah.
What are you boys doing? Let's talk sports for a second here.
Sam and I are going to solve the Cubs and White Sox problem on the show today. We both know, really everybody knows, that Chris Sale is not going to be traded from the White Sox to the Cubs. So we're not going to have that conversation. But we are going to have the conversation that if Sam is going to play Rick Hahn / Kenny Williams, and I'm going to play...
Don't forget Jerry.
Yeah.
Jerry Reinsdorf is in there, too.
Absolutely. That's my bad. I'll throw in three, then two. I'll be Tom Rickett / Theo and Jed Hoyer. We're going to get the deal done.
What's the big problem the Cubs have to solve, though? You said we're going to solve the Cubs and Sox problem.
Well, the Cubs are trying to win a World Series, something they haven't done for a couple of years now. And they could use, another front-of-the-rotation starter, I think.
Is that what they're missing?
Well, they addressed their bullpen this week. I think anytime you add on Chris Sale, that would be...
There's this salivation for Cub fans. They picture their rotation in the playoffs, Sale, Arrieta, John Lester. And they think that three-headed monster bring the elusive title that they've been chasing for over 100 years. The problem is it's never going to happen because Jerry Reinsdorf and company would probably never do anything to try and help the Cubs win said title.
Well, do they need that, though? Do they need a Sale? I mean, that'd be nice, but they could win it with the guys they got now, couldn't they?
They could, but then there was that little period with Jake Arrieta where he didn't look like Jake Arrieta. Depth in starting pitching and number one depth, that'd be unbelievable. Yeah. That would be Atlanta Braves. That's now the Braves, of course, won it once.
How does that work,
years.
Though? Like, can you spend as much money as you want? Is there a cap? Do you have to trade some players?
And the Cubs, listen, the Cubs can get any player they want, even Chris Sale, if they really wanted to get him. And now the White Sox will make that very cost prohibitive. But I think if you could trade Anthony Rizzo, you could trade Chris Bryant.
No, you could not.
Well, they wouldn't do it, but you could trade Addison Russell, and you could trade Kyle Schwarber. And
I was going to say, we've been doing it without the Schwarb. Maybe we're going
to
trade him.
That's the logic, though, that nobody is untouchable. And if you're a general manager, you have to take into account the market and what you could get for some of your best players. And I don't know if you saw this, but the Sox GM, Rick Hahn, on Thursday said that we've been mired in mediocrity. So if we get the right offer, it's time to maybe collect on some of these chips that we have. And they've got a couple good guys in that rotation. They could deal, hypothetically, and bring back a boatload of players.
I mean, I think mired in mediocrity is not a bad place to be if you have a radio show.
It's perfect.
just let that ride.
There's some good and then there's some bad. You get a little bit of everything.
If you're a baseball team, mired in mediocrity is not great.
You guys are. We'll be listening. Thanks for coming by and saying hi, and get ready for the boys from the Beat. That's coming up next on WGN.